Welcome you back tonight to the story of Joseph. If you were here last Sunday night or you've read in this part of the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible, you'll find about 11 chapters or so. Well, really back to 12, including the birth of Joseph, and beyond that time, 13, 14 chapters that include stories about Joseph from the Old Testament. Joseph was the fourth generation of what we call the patriarchs. You have Abraham, and then you have the generation of Isaac, and then you have the generation of Jacob, and then you have the generation of Joseph and his brothers. Last Sunday night, we talked about Joseph especially, the 11th son. 10 sons were born to Jacob before Joseph came along. 10 sons, and then Joseph. And then finally Benjamin a little bit later, much younger. And we read about last week Joseph and his brothers. There was such animosity between Joseph and his 10 brothers. Last week we talked about where that animosity came from and how it had gotten to the place of such hatred and such feelings of anger toward Joseph from his brothers. Certainly we acknowledge that perhaps the root problem was the favoritism that took place in Joseph's life. Favoritism was very painful in all the patriarchs and every generation. And the favoritism was, you might would call it, a great curse on Jacob's life. Some people say, oh, he had such a great life as a youngster. Not really. He had a very difficult life. And by the time he got to the age of being a teenager, it says the age of 17 is where this story takes place in his life. Interesting, this morning I talked about another young man who, about the age of 15 or 16 or 17, we have the great story of David and Goliath. And David was probably 15 or 16 or 17 when he fought Goliath. And what an example his life was. Well, Joseph is another one of those young people whose life and story is very interesting. And when he was 17 year old, we move into what happened to Joseph when he was 17 years old. By the time he's 17 years old, it's not just that Joseph is disliked by his brothers and they're jealous of all the favoritism and everything that he received from his father. It's not just that they were envious of him or they disliked him, but we read last week that they absolutely hated his brother. 10 of them, and they hated Joseph. I don't know if you've ever felt like you've been hated by somebody before, but think of that. 10 brothers that hated you. We read 3 times last week, and they hated him. They hated him all the more. And then came the dreams that Joseph had, 2 of them, 2 dreams. And in both of those dreams, he dreamed that the sheaves of grain and the stars of the sky were bowing down to him. And the dreams were unmistakable in their meaning, indicating that Joseph was saying in those dreams, or in the interpretation of those dreams, that those 10 brothers would bow down to him. And we're told that he just hated them more. And there's such animosity between these brothers. Well, we move on tonight in chapter 37 to the story of what happened to Joseph as he turned 17. And if you want to read along with me, turn to chapter 37. I'm going to read verses 12 through 28. I'm going to read about Joseph being sold into slavery by his brothers. Again, I'm going to read part of the story tonight. I'm not going to read all of it. It's a long story and there's a lot of details. And we're only going to look at a few of them tonight, but chapter 37, verse 12, it says, "Now the brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, 'As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them.' 'Very well,' he replied. So he said to him, 'Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me.' Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, 'What are you looking for?' He replied, 'I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?' 'They have moved on from here,' the man answered. I heard them say, let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan, and they saw him in the distance. And before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to their father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. His brothers agreed. So when the Midianites merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. So when Joseph woke up that morning, he was living in his father's house, his father's tent, probably, and his father says, Joseph, I want you to go out and check on your brothers. I want you to go and find them and bring back a report to me of how your brothers are doing. It does seem at this point that Joseph had the easier life. He seemed to be living a life of luxury. We know that he had a nice coat. We've kind of made a lot of that, and in this story, the coat, whatever you call it, the coat of many colors, it's called. Go on to that next slide, would you, Dan? The coat of many colors just represents something about who Joseph was, and really who his father was. And so there he was. He gets up in the morning, having slept probably in a comfortable place the night before, and his father calls to him and says, Joseph, I want you to go out and I want you to check on your brothers. And Joseph says, well, I suppose I can do that. And I imagine he put on that nice, beautiful, royal, colorful robe, whatever it was. And I don't know what kind of animal he may have been traveling on as he went the distance to find his brothers. Maybe a horse. I'm not sure what he might have been riding at the time. But he's at home with his father while his 10 older brothers are out working, grazing the flocks. Joseph's job appears to be to check on his brothers and to bring report back to the father. He's 17 years old by now. His 10 brothers are much older, some of them maybe up to 30 to 35 years old, probably. Again, there were 10 brothers, 4 different wives, and not sure of the timing, but they were significantly, some of them had to be significantly older. And he's 17 years old, and he has reached the position of being the inspector of his brother's work. At least that's what it seemed like. Some would call him a paid tattletale. I'm not sure. The reason I say that is back in verse 2 of chapter 37, the same chapter, we read this. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. So at least once before, and maybe often, Joseph had been the one who was going back and telling on these boys and these sons and if they were not doing things that they were supposed to do. Surely that did not make him popular with his brothers either. You think of all the things that Joseph had going against him, this would probably add to the list. Well, we also know that Jacob's family from this description lived a very nomadic life. That meant that the animals that they had needed food and water. And in that part of Israel at that time, there were places where there were hills and valleys in order to graze the animals and the flocks. But also we know that they had to move around in order to find it. So we have a nomadic life that's taken place at this time. And they would have to allow their animals, their flocks, to go wherever there was food. The map that should be up here in just a minute shows the towns in that story. Jump up there, would you, Dan? Thank you. Okay, I don't know if you can read this and see this, but I do want to highlight a little bit the distances on here. Right here is Hebron. That's where Jacob lives. That's where the family's home is, okay? Bethel is on this map, but it's also a sacred place to Jacob. It's where he encountered the Spirit of God. Shechem is the place where Jacob sends Joseph to find his brothers. That's about 40 miles. So you want to think about the distances of where they had to go to get food. 40 miles is a long way, but they had to go north apparently in order to graze their animals. Remember, Jacob was very wealthy by now. He had a lot of flocks, and he was very rich, in other words. And he was so rich that they probably couldn't find much to eat in this area, but north into these valleys, which is kind of northern Israel at this point, you had those well-watered valleys. And so Jacob's sons have taken these animals 40 miles, and they're somewhere around Shechem. And Jacob says, Joseph, I want you to go to Shechem, and I want you to check on the animals and my brothers. In fact, he says that both. Check on the brothers and check on the animals. That's what Jacob wants him to do. Now, but they've been in Shechem for a while, but they've run out of food, apparently. And so when Joseph gets to Shechem, he's wandering around looking for him, and a man comes out and says, what are you doing wandering around out in the fields? And he says, I'm looking for my brothers, the sons of Jacob. And so the man says, well, I know they went north. They went toward Dothan. So here's Dothan, and it's about 12 miles right there. So you got 40 miles, and you got 12 miles. They are 52 miles from Jacob. They are away from his influence. And away from his influence, out in the wilderness, if you will, away from their influence, there the brothers are working, and Joseph comes to check on them. This certainly shows us the distances and the nomadic life that many of the patriarchs and people in this culture and in this day, how they existed. So Joseph is looking for them. He finds help from a man in Shechem, and he moves on north to this town or this area where he finds his brothers. It says that where his brothers see him in the distance. I find that curious, where his brothers see him in the distance. Look at verse 18. If you're following along in your Bible, I think this is an interesting verse and what it says there. It says, but they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other, let's kill him. I find that kind of a curious thing, that they see Joseph out in the distance coming toward them, and already they're plotting to kill him. Probably, well, we know that he was wearing his robe, and so maybe their eyesight didn't have to be that good to see the bright robe coming their way. I don't know how high Joseph was riding in his saddle either. I don't know if there was an issue of how Joseph carried himself or not. I don't know. But whatever the case, when Joseph is on the way, they're plotting to kill him already. It's past the point of sibling rivalry. It's past the point of brothers who are irritated because their father favors one of them instead of favoring all of them. You remember the tensions that those brothers also have probably lived with as they grew up. I mean, let's think back to their home and how they grew up. First of all, their mothers were rival. 10 sons, mothers, I should say, plural. There was Leah, and there was Bilhah, and there was Zilpah, and there was Rachel. So there were 4 women in the home who had borne children to Jacob. And in part, as we think about monogamy and how God desires for there to be a marriage between one man and one woman until death do them part, you can see in this story, maybe this is an obvious thing, but I'm sure going to mention it, you see the pain of having multiple wives and multiple children. And yes, Leah and Rachel dealt with that, and Zilpah and Bilhah dealt with that, and I'm sure Jacob dealt with that a lot in trying to manage that and keep everybody happy and all those things. But you know who else dealt with that? The children. The children did. And they lived in the home of tension and favoritism. You wonder how these brothers got so angry. These stories set something off in me about our culture too. And children that don't have fathers, places where there's multiple families, and how difficult and challenging that can be, how painful that is for so many people. Well, I'm thinking of these 10 brothers. First of all, their mothers, Leah and Rachel, at least the first six, Reuben and Judah and Levi and Simeon, and I may not remember all their names as I say them, but you know, their mothers were part of the household, and there was tension between them all the time. Just imagine what the brothers felt as they experienced that. You think those 10 brothers had to live with this. Had to live with whatever happened there between the wives. We would call it dishes being thrown and nasty words and constant jealousy and pain and tension that was there. I'm just trying to imagine, you know, these brothers do a despicable thing here. Also trying to understand what it was like to grow up in that home. And then when Joseph finally came along, those 10 sons who had to put up with the tensions in the home between their mother, six of them, Leah and Bilhah and Zilpah, and seeing the unhappiness of Rachel and how just trying to remember the word, how unhappy she was and the pain of not having. And finally she became pregnant and she gave birth to a son, and he was named Joseph. And oh, how Jacob was so proud of Joseph. And now 17 years later, Joseph is their supervisor. That might be a stretch to call him that. But he's the one that's going out to check on him and bring report back to Dad. And boy, can you just imagine how much those 10 sons hated Joseph. Not excusing what they did at all. In fact, they have certainly their measure of guilt and will, and they'll carry that till their death, and certainly to the point that they look Joseph in the eye and he forgives them, and they somehow are able to accept that and move together to Egypt many, many years later. But for now, here are 10 brothers. They all have feelings of hatred and agony and pain and all these things that come to them. Joseph is now their supervisor, at least the inspector. In addition to that, he's had these two dreams that have just absolutely caused his brothers to hate him even more. I mean, all these things about Joseph have added up to such animosity. And so when they see him in the distance, they plotted to kill him. Again, notice, all they do is see him coming, and they're already plotting. The hatred, the bitterness, is so strong that even before he opens his mouth, even before he arrives to tell him, well, Dad sent me, they probably knew that already, I'm guessing. Well, here he comes again, riding on his nice horse and his nice coat. And they wanted to see him dead. So there's a series of, there's a plot that takes place. First of all, they want to see him dead. And that's really what we see first, is kill him. Whatever it takes, just right here, kill him. Don't worry about the consequences. We hate him so much that all we care about is he's dead. Then Reuben steps forward. He's the oldest brother, and he convinces them not to kill him. I'll say a little bit more about Reuben in a few minutes. But one of them says, wait a minute, guys. Oh, slow down. We just can't kill him. We can't do that. It's not the right thing to do. And so the brothers at least listen a little bit to Reuben, and Reuben kind of speaks up and says, no, don't kill him for now. Just don't do that. That's not the right thing. So when they get there, it says that when Joseph arrives, they rip off the robe. I mean, that is a symbol of everything that Joseph is. They rip it off. You just see him in anger. And they put him down in the cistern. Verse 23, so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him in a cistern. Then they sat down for their meal. Opportunity comes by a little bit later in the day. They kill him. They think they're going to dump his body. His brother intercedes, and so they just put him in the cistern, and who knows what's going to happen from there, but that's the plan so far. And they put him in the cistern, and then they sit down to eat their meal, and a band of Ishmaelites come by. Who are the Ishmaelites? That's kind of a curious thing. Who is it that has come by at this timing in this place of Dothan, which is not too far from that road I described a few weeks ago, the road by the sea that went from the Fertile Crescent down into Egypt? That's where the road by the sea is kind of like the highway for traders. And so it would have been very normal for them to come by and caravans to come by from different countries and different places. So the Ishmaelites come by. Who are the Ishmaelites? Number one, they're traders, but they're also their relationship to Jacob. You remember who the Ishmaelites, Ishmael, the other son of Abraham. There was Isaac and there was Ishmael. So here we are three generations later, and the Ishmaelites come from their distant country, and they're coming down through, and here they are, whatever you'd call them, third cousins or whatever they are, to Jacob and to Joseph, and they come by, and they discover this family. Maybe they know this is Abraham's family. They probably are told that. I'm not sure. It doesn't say a lot about that, but they negotiate, and of course, they're traders. They're probably traders in people in slavery, and so they sell Jacob or Joseph into slavery. 20 shekels of silver. In some ways, it was a great relief to the brothers. They didn't have to kill him. They probably had enough of a conscience, and with the persuasion of Reuben and Judah, they had enough of a conscience that they didn't want to kill their little brother. Anything. I mean, they wanted him gone. And if they had to kill him, they would, but little brother is gone. And so now what do? They've sold their brother. Somebody's got to go back and tell Jacob, and so they make up a story. And they say, well, what are we going to tell Dad? I mean, he's going to know that Joseph came, and what are we going to tell him? They knew also that he was the favorite, and that had to hurt a lot, but maybe they also cared about their dad's feelings too, and you know what they felt. But whatever it was, they made up a story. What are we going to tell Dad? We can't tell him we sold him into slavery. I mean, so, well, let's take that coat. Let's go find an animal and take its blood and put it on the coat and take it back and show it to the father and tell him that Joseph is dead. We found the coat. We don't exactly know what happened, but we found the coat. They allow Jacob to believe a lie. So we have, in addition to favoritism, the patriarch story, we have near murder, but we have lying, we have hatred between brothers. Boy, the patriarchal story has a lot for us to think about, and as we see how God is going to be working, even with the pain of this story, God's going to be working in the life of Joseph. Apparently, we can say about this story too, we can look a little bit deeper about Reuben and Reuben's role in this story. Number one, we know that Reuben was the oldest brother. And as the oldest brother, Reuben would have been responsible for basically the behavior of his brothers. In the Eastern culture, the oldest brother is responsible for all the children. I mean, we've seen that a little bit in our family, and the perceptions of Jennifer and Hakeem as the oldest brother in his family, and he's explained to us a little bit how they see that. And the oldest brother is responsible for the rest of the children. That's why there's kind of the justification that the father would give the entire inheritance to the oldest brother, and then the oldest brother would take care of the rest of the family. That was the responsibility of the firstborn. We kind of think of that responsibility of the firstborn of being very unfair to the rest of the family, but the idea behind it, the original idea, was not that the firstborn son then would go and spend it all on himself, but he would wisely take the inheritance and he would take care of the family. That would be his responsibility. So Reuben would have been the oldest brother. He would have been the one that would have been most responsible for what happens to Joseph and what his brothers do. He did not want Joseph to be killed. Very clearly, he did not. In fact, it says that he plotted in order to take Joseph back to his father. So Reuben was not consenting to killing Joseph at all. And when the caravan came by, it says that Reuben wasn't there. He didn't know about it. He didn't agree to it. He didn't say to his other brothers, okay, well, let's sell him. We're getting rid of him this way. We're getting him saved. Reuben wasn't in on that at all. He was absent when Joseph was sold. Now we do read his reaction. We know that eventually he went along with a lie. He stepped back from doing what he should have done, and instead of saying, taking responsibility and declaring when he got back to his father Jacob, he couldn't tell him the truth. He didn't tell him the truth, and he went along with a lie. And look at verse 29. It says, when Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, the boy isn't there. Where can I turn now? Now Reuben is feeling like the responsible brother. Now he calls him the boy. As if to say, he's just a boy. We've been too hard on him. What am I going to do? You can hear in Reuben this older brother's concern or fear about the brother. He's gone now, and Reuben feels responsible. What are we going to do? Where can I turn now? And then they cook up the plot, and it says that they slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, we found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe. Just hearing those words. Examine it to see if it is your son's robe. They knew whose robe it was. But they say to Jacob, Jacob, something's happened. We found this and we think it's Joseph's, but Jacob, we brought it to you. And then Jacob tore his clothes. I noticed here that there's a lot of tearing of clothes. There's the tearing of the robe off Joseph. There's Reuben tearing his clothes. And then Jacob in his grief. Then Jacob tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and mourned for his son for many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. Here we see a picture again of the father and refused to be comforted. Maybe he refused really to recognize that he had other sons too. There's also Jacob or Judah in this story. I mentioned about the role of Reuben and how he did not want, but Judah also had a role. He says, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. It's Judah that comes up with the idea of selling Joseph. Again, he doesn't speak rightfully, but he won't allow him to be killed. So Judah kind of joins Reuben in protecting Joseph from being killed. We think of the significance of Judah in the Old Testament, and King David will come from the line of the tribe of Judah, and Jesus himself will go back to the line of Judah. We notice that it's something about the blood. He stands against killing Joseph, the brother, and his brothers relent. I'll just read it again. Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. This is Judah talking. Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. Finally, his brothers come to the place of, maybe they had this animosity in their heart, but they stopped short of murdering him. And so they agree to sell him. But you know, what if they would have murdered him? God would not have been able to use Joseph as he did. But God allowed them to go so far. And then I don't know if you'd say God made them stop. But God knew what he was going to do in the life of Joseph. He had given Joseph the dreams. Those dreams would be fulfilled later on in his life. His brothers agreed. So Joseph is sold into slavery. First, he's sold to the Ishmaelites, who simply are slave traders at this point, and they travel on down to Egypt, and they sell Joseph in Egypt to an official of the Pharaoh for a slave. His name is Potiphar. So the brothers go back home, and they say, they deceive Jacob and say, Jacob, they basically tell him, your son's dead, your son is gone. And Joseph is in Egypt. And then for 20 years, nobody hears from Joseph. They all believe he's gone. But God is working all through that time period. And God will work in that time period. You know, God works in the good times of our lives and the hard times of our lives. God was at work in Joseph's life. God never abandoned Joseph. God knew the well, the cistern that Joseph was in. And God was at work over time. And we will see and trace the picture of God at work in this sad story. And this is a sad story. This part of the story is painful. I don't think we should avoid Bible stories that are painful. Maybe we should feel some pain sometimes. It might help us to relate and to hear God's voice in the midst of that. But God worked in Joseph's life, and we'll pick that up the next time that we're together on Sunday night.